I'm Del Pilar, and I am the conservative Latino, and I'm here with
Big John.
He always says Big John, people, but it's supposed to be Big Girthy John.
Well, for those porn lovers out there, I guess you could throw in Girthy. That's fair enough. I'll take it.
Girthy's just that weird word that kind of says creeps up in your back.
Yeah, it does make me sound like either a porn star, a pedophile, or a stalker. I'm not sure which one. But, hey, whatever. I'm willing to go with it. Whatever gets us views, William.
I can picture you having. There's this emoji I love using. And for the record, guys who say guys who use emoji aren't men, are you that insecure with your little penis that you have to sit there and make fun of guys who just use emojis? Come on now, you know?
Right.
Well, anyway, there's this puzzled look with the eyes open, you know, emoji, yeah, it says that. I can picture your face going that route if your wife one day says, hey, Girthy, how you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Definitely.
Anyway, John, we've got a big Girthy show tonight.
There you go.
Mentoring in pro sports is one topic. When leftists attack comedians.
Ooh.
And who's watching the Black News Channel? No one.
Gotcha.
So we've got three interesting topics tonight, especially the Black News Channel. People, this was John's choice. This happened about a month and a half ago. And in researching it, it was not puzzling, but a little surprising at how little talk there was of the Black News Channel going under. And I'll be honest, John, I don't know what this means, but there was not one white news station, news media outlet, whatever, individuals. All my research, it was Black groups talking about the demise of one of their channels. And it was an interesting, I don't want to say angle, that's a little demeaning. It was an interesting take to see it come from that point of view.
Right.
Because culturally speaking, we all look at things differently. I view things mostly as an American. Every once in a blue moon, I'll view something as Latino, and usually it's because the left is pushing something. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, that's not Latino. You know, like Latinx. You know, there's a new one, Latin E or Latin or something like that. You know, it's like these white leftists keep trying to put us in a box. Anyway, I'm digressing here. We got a great show. We're going to start with segment one, when leftists attack.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to start out with this, John, and I want to get your take on this. Max Eastman, a writer and radical leftist political activist from the 19th century, you know, at the turn of the 1800s and the 1900s, that was kind of his heyday. He said, it's the ability to take a joke, not make one, that proves you have a sense of humor.
Right.
What's your take?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. Look, one of the things you have to – if you don't have thick skin as a comedian – you don't deserve to be a comedian, especially a stand-up. A stand-up has to have a lot of thick skin. Like, one of the people that I always thought should have never been a comedian was Chevy Chase. First of all, I don't find him all that funny.
But, hold on. Are we talking about because there's a difference between a stand-up comic
right.
and a
Well, he was a little bit of both, but he was a Saturday Night Live player, people remember. Then he became a star.
Right. He was the first big graduate from that.
Right. But throughout his career, there's all these instances of him losing his mind over what he perceived were bad jokes about him. I remember Howard Stern driving him crazy when he first started calling him. Him and Gilbert Gottfried would drive Chase crazy by making jokes, like, you know, and then, like, there was that phone call that somebody recorded of him freaking out at the director of Community, I think, that show about an old guy going back to college or something on NBC for a while. So he struck me as someone like, why is this guy a comedian? He can dish it, but he can't take it.
So in other words, the only time I will sit there and judge a comedian by how good they are is how they handle hecklers.
Yes.
To me, it's pure magic. When a comedian can handle a heckler naturally, I'm like, it's like an NFL player. God's given him talent, and he knows how to use it.
You're right. And listen, I'm the first to say, stand-up comedy to me is a revered art because I can't do stand-up comedy. I'd like to think I'm a funny guy. I like to think that in personal interactions, I make people laugh. I can certainly take a joke. I rarely get angry at someone making fun of me. But to be able to get on stage and deal with hecklers in a funny manner, in an efficient manner, I'm not that quick. You know what I mean?
Right. But it's also the exact opposite in some cases. For example, one of the funniest comedians in terms of being underrated in the comedic world, he was probably well known by everybody. Mm-hmm. But in America, he should have been known by more. And it's the guy who had the drug OD, Greg something, Greg Girardi. What was his name?
Oh, Greg Giraldo.
Greg Giraldo. Great comedian.
Awesome.
He sucked in every sitcom they gave him to try to make him a star.
Right. Well, it was a running joke on Tough Crowd, which was the Comedy Central show that he was actually awesome in. Because he was all the same type of New York comedians. Colin Quinn, Patrice O'Neill, Jim Norton.
I remember Greg Giraldo. But that wasn't a sitcom.
They would make fun of him. They would make fun of him. Because they would say, like, oh, he would say something like, I got to leave early today. And someone would joke, like, why? Is it your 25th failed sitcom that you're heading off to?
George Clooney had like 6 or 8 or maybe up to 10 failed shows. So you never know. There's a certain guy right now who's going around. I can't remember who he is, but he's been like a sitcom after sitcom after sitcom.
Yeah, and sitcoms are a different beast, right? That's more of an acting role. But stand-ups, like Giraldo, people forget, he was a Harvard-graduated lawyer. He was a smart dude. And when people tried to get on him intellectually, he would cut them to shreds. And he was quick, very funny, very, very biting, very certain type of humor. So if you can't take it, don't be a stand-up comedian. If you get offended as a stand-up comedian, you should have that title stripped of you. Like Bill Maher, as goofy as he may be sometimes, is another great stand-up comedian. You can't offend him during his act. For the most part, he's fearless. So whether you find him funny or not, he does his job as a stand-up comedian, and you got to respect that.
Yeah, Bill Maher's like kind of like that dry humor for me. I enjoy him. I haven't seen him in days, so I'm referring more to his little rants that he goes on during his show. But we're going off schedule here a little bit. Back to earth.
Talk
about the Netflix is a Joke Festival that saw Dave Chappelle attacked by a man with a weapon shaped like a gun, but that actually was a knife. A knife could pop out.
It actually looked like something that had a bayonet on it. Almost.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned. So he was attacked by an individual called Isaiah Lee, 23, mm-hmm. and he went around running around the video screen, and they quickly grabbed him and gave him a beatdown.
Oh yeah.
After the attack, Chris Rock joined Chappelle on stage, grabbed the mic, and asked, "Was that Will Smith?"
Right, yeah.
That's brilliant comedy.
Yes, those are true comedians because I think Will Smith and Jamie Foxx, of all people, came running out to help Chappelle. And supposedly, I didn't notice it on the tape when I watched it, but I read some reports that Jamie Foxx got in on the beatdown of the guy. He was one of the guys who got in and tried to tackle the guy.
I've seen that happen in the military. I've seen guys jump on one guy, and the guy's getting beat up until about 6 or 7. Usually it's sailors. They come over and they pound the guy. It's always somebody drunk. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
listen, you have to give him an extra pounding because when you're that hammered, you don't feel pain.
Oh, you don't feel pain. And who knows if you're on drugs or whatever. But also, Chappelle isn't the guy that started out his comedy career 20. He's not this skinny little kid anymore. Chappelle is pretty buff if you look at him now. You could tell he lifts. He's kind of cut.
Yeah, but John, I can tell you this. I'm taking over 10 years of self-defense courses, and I can tell you, I'll run. But if I'm pushing a corner, I know how to defend myself. And what I learned in the training, the average human does not know how to fight.
Oh, agreed.
So just because you work out doesn't mean to take on a guy. So luckily he was there because there's also the shock. We're either fight or flight. I'm a flight guy. That's why MMA guys get into a situation with somebody on the street. They're going to get destroyed.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
At the end of the day, they know how to fight. I remember I had a cousin and he was a boxer. This was back like in 86, 87. And we were just, moving around like that. He wanted me to do them to show him. And there was just a couple of little tricks that boxers use.
Right.
And boom, I was down and out, He goes, "Don't ever get in a fight with a boxer."
The other
flip side is I was a wrestler. I was in a few scraps. Mm. As a wrestler, I could take somebody down who was bigger, or I could keep myself from being taken down. Because this is the other thing about fighting most people don't realize. It's not standing up, moving around. Usually within seconds, you're tapping each other, trying to get leverage. As a sailor who couldn't handle his liquor, sadly, I learned both the hard way and I got my punches in every so often.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I agree. And that's what you learn quickly. It's if you don't know how to fight and you go up against someone who does, like I don't claim to be, especially at my age now, I don't claim to be a fighter anymore. But I wrestled in high school and college. You know, it's like I could drop people on their heads if I – now, would I do the same against another wrestler or another boxer? Probably not. But if someone bum rushes me, I not an issue. I'll choke them out. But the issue is that when you're on stage, the last thing you expect is someone to bum rush you.
Well, in his defense, Chappelle did continue his set.
Yes, true comedian. You know,
he handled it well. The police reported that the assailant was armed with a replica gun, to get more specific, and it can eject a knife blade when discharged correctly. Right. So to me, this was an assault.
An assault with a deadly weapon. Yeah.
The Lee was taken into custody, but he's only facing misdemeanor charges. Today, the judge turned down his request to lower bail, which was already set at $30,000, which means what? What's 10% of $30,000? $3,000 he has to come up with?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, you and I, we probably go, well, what's the big deal? But the truth of the matter is the average American doesn't have $400 in the bank.
Right. That's probably why they didn't bother raising it. They probably looked at his circumstances and they can't afford the $3,000 anyway.
Yeah. So but he did plead not guilty. Yeah. Later on in the week, Chappelle and then Chris Rock, I guess he did a little secret comedy show or something a couple days later, and they went and they talked about their assaults. And Chappelle wants the attacker charged with a felony.
Right.
But our favorite Soros-backed DA in Los Angeles, Jorge Gascon, said no go. Yeah. Now, the question must be raised. I am into the identity politics in terms of I know how that world works. This was a young black man, if I'm correct.
Correct.
He had been charged had he been white. What's your take?
Oh, yeah, anybody would have been charged. Now, whether they would have been charged with a felony, look.
No, that's what I'm asking. Would he have been charged with a felony?
I honestly don't know.
I
don't know what constitutes a felony in that case because he didn't injure him. I don't think the weapon was out. Like, he didn't attempt to stab him.
John, stop. We're not lawyers. I can see that. But saying the weapon isn't out is like the assailant saying, well, I didn't fire my gun, you know?
Well, yeah. And believe it or not, that makes a difference in a lot of cases. Like, if you're merely armed.
It shouldn't.
Well, whether it should or not.
It depends on what the intent is. Isn't that why they say with intent?
Sure.
You don't know the law, so I don't want to speculate on that.
Right. So should he have been as a matter of what do we feel is what you're asking?
No, not what we feel. It's what if he attacked him with intent to hurt him, that should be a felony. And so if he attacked him with intent to do harm, that harm – well, it didn't mean to stab him in the heart. I just meant to get him in the side there, Your Honor.
No, I agree with you, but I'm saying he wasn't stabbed. I don't think they said that he tried to stab him. That's why I'm saying I don't know if it was a felony because when I saw the video, I saw the guy tackle him, like spear him with his body. But
let me put it this way. Would they have charged somebody attacking the president like that, throwing his ass in jail?
Oh, of course.
Well, then what the hell does not Dave Chappelle get that same right?
Because we know that not everybody's treated equally in this country. And I don't think it's,
I agree.
I don't think it's black and white. I don't think it's black and white. I think it's just, I don't know if anybody would have been charged with a felony if they weren't in, like, intent comes from also action, right? So if he didn't attempt to stab him or cut him or shoot him, I don't know that that's a felony.
He may not have been within reach yet. Yeah, maybe that's why he was running around. And
but
then
he tackled
him,
right?
Didn't he tackle the security system would get to the guy before they even had a chance. Yeah.
Right, he would have never made the stage of security.
Right. Yeah. But the point is, I can't see, prior to the last 10 years, I couldn't see somebody not being properly charged because of the intent.
What did they charge him with?
Battery, possession of a weapon with intent to assault, unauthorized access to the stage area during the performance, commission of an act that delays an event or interferes with the performer.
That's a weird one, by the way.
Huh?
That's a weird one, that last one.
Well, yeah, and that's what kind of makes it a joke.
Yeah, I'm saying, like,
So here was the quote. After reviewing the evidence, prosecutors determined that while criminal conduct occurred, the evidence as presented did not constitute felony conduct. District Attorney spokesman to the Hollywood Reporter. And let's give a hat tip to the Hollywood Reporter, Abid Rahman and Seth Abramovich. I've heard of Seth Abramovich before. I've read his work. I think he's a hardcore leftist. Dave Chappelle provides new details of attack at secret stand-up show, joined by Chris Rock on stage. Now, here's the interesting, and here's where I want to get your take. And Chappelle convinced venue security to allow him to talk to his alleged assailant. He asked him what prompted the attack. The assailant says he was trying to get attention about his grandmother in Brooklyn who had been forced out of her neighborhood by gentrification. The attack was meant to draw attention to her plight. And Hinckley murdered John Lennon over Jodie Foster or something, right? You know, hey, Your Honor, I really didn't mean to kill him. It was just to get Jodie Foster's attention. Right. I'm innocent. I mean, that's what we're getting to with some of these. And Chappelle did say the guy seemed like he was mentally.
I was going to say, clearly, even when you brought up the Hinckley case, clearly you're dealing with people who are mentally unbalanced. Like, he didn't attack Chappelle. Like, I mean, how would a logical person at all conclude that committing this would bring attention to your grandmother in Brooklyn, right? It's crazy.
I don't think we can no longer say these are nut jobs, because the whole leftist attack mode through BLM, through Antifa, through the Bernie Sanders nut job killing, they crossed the line mentally with the encouragement of the Democrat Party. Because when you don't condone something and you look the other way and allow it to happen.
Condemn
something and condone it, it just exponentially grows. In this case, I'm blaming the Democrats. Because it is mostly Democrats. Most of the ones on the right, they are nut jobs. That lone white guy, you find out he's been, you know, disassociated with society for a while. So, yeah, I do blame the left on this. They allowed the Oscars. I blame the Oscars on this. You know, now, speaking of the Oscar, after Will Smith, incident happened of blatantly attacking an innocent Chris Rock for making a great joke. Comedians stated it would be open season on them if nothing was done to Will Smith. Nothing was done to Will Smith. 1 month later, Chappelle's attack. I'm one of those believers. I think it goes before Will Smith. It goes to about the time Trump got elected and all the violence talk started. And even before then with Bernie Sanders. We've seen a shift since Obama. The big thing was Obama's got to be protected, all the haters. Well, it turns out it was the exact opposite. The left, remember, we're talking about a group of individuals who didn't attack a cowboy in Missouri or Mississippi for wearing an Obama mask, but they ruined his life. So there's been points that have led up to this point of now where it's open season on anybody who disagrees with somebody else's view. So you could be walking on the street after so many years of podcast and get attacked by somebody, and it's a nut job. Is it really now? Or just they know that Eric Williams and the DA there and in Philadelphia and LA, they know they won't be charged. People see, I give people more credit than what society wants to give it. It doesn't take a smart man to realize, well, they're letting everybody else out. They're going to let me out. I've been babbling here. What's your take?
Well, this is sort of like, there's a lot that goes into what you were saying. So first of all, I'll say this. Comedians, especially stand-ups, being held up as targets for being on the edge of commentary, whichever side you're on, is nothing new. That goes back, those of us who know about
any time in history, had there been two attacks within a month of a comedian saying a joke?
Well, listen, Lenny Bruce would get attacked all the time. He'd get arrested.
Physically attacked?
All the time. Yeah, he'd get arrested. He'd get thrown in jail for saying "sea sucker." You know, he would say "sea sucker" in a club, and he would get arrested.
Yeah, Jim Morrison was arrested for showing his mic. They thought it was his penis. Those are exceptions to the rule because society was different.
But I'm saying it's not. It's not necessarily specific. I'm just stating, it's not like it's never happened before. It's happened to some degree or another. It's been happening.
Not like it has the past 10 years.
Listen, what's been happening lately that I think...
Let me pause you real quick. I'm not just talking attacks, Big John. I'm talking about the cancel culture. Comedians can't even perform. Yeah.
Well, a lot of comedians do say that, by the way. So, yeah. Very famously, Jerry Seinfeld said, "I'm never playing another college again." He said that a couple of years ago. He said,
Chris Rock said
he might do the same thing because he said, "You just can't perform for these people." Joe Rogan had an Indian comedian on. I don't remember the gentleman's name. Young guy starting out. He went to Columbia University, New York, an Ivy League school, and he started doing his joke. And halfway through, they turned off the lights on him and asked him to leave the stage because felt he was being anti-woman, right? And this is, again, a comedian. So to that extent, I think you're right. I think we're becoming more and more humorless. I don't think it's necessarily specifically since Obama or Biden or whatever.
I'm saying it's ramped up since about 2010, about 2012.
Probably even before that a little bit because I could definitely remember even during like
the shoe being thrown at Bush by a reporter. But of course
that was overseas. That was you can't go by that. And throwing a shoe is very specific to Arabic culture. But yeah, like yeah. for example,
okay, okay, hold on though. So do comics have to rethink their jokes for fear of being hurt? Okay, hold on. Should they? Or I'm sorry. Do comics have to rethink? Now, it's a two-parter because should they have to rethink? And two, if they do rethink it, are they being true to themselves as a comedian?
Should they rethink what they say? My gut answer is no, they shouldn't, because then they're giving in to intimidation.
The mob. Yeah.
They're giving in to the mob. So would I be more prudent? Like I would insist that the club had security. I would, especially if I'm someone that is making what is considered insulting jokes. If you're part of that genre, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's not just Chappelle, right? Tom Segura is a big comedian that said the same thing, and he said, "Look, I'm a big guy. You come up on stage, I may not beat you up, but he goes, I'm going to put up a fight. I'm an ex athlete.
I'm 5'7".
Yeah.
I'm like that. I'm like, you may beat my ass, but I'm going to get one or two. You ain't going to come up here and just
right. count them. There's a lot of comedians who are taking that sort of defiant approach, and I applaud them. Yeah. Should they change? Absolutely not.
I agree.
And are they being true to themselves? I think that's a lot trickier to answer because, for example, if you look at some, quote, alternative comics like Janine Garofalo, right? Like, I don't particularly care for her.
But
her whole shtick was, oh, I'm an alternative comedian. I'm not going to say this. I'm going to say that. The question is, how do they feel? And believe it or not, I don't know specifically about Janine Garofalo, but I've heard a lot of comedians and comedians especially say, we're not going to say certain things because they're offensive and maybe we've gone too far, which to my sensibilities is crazy. Like, it's the same way that certain journalists call for censorship.
Exactly. I just don't get it. Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Cheech Chong. This is why people, John and I, are like, no, you stick to your guns. Because George Carlin stuck to his guns. Richard Pryor stuck to his guns. Cheech and Chong, when they remembered, they stuck to their guns.
Listen, believe it or not, and I could see some students of comedy out there saying, but Big John, William, didn't Richard Pryor stop using the N-word? Didn't he stop saying, you know, at some point he decided he wasn't going to use the word anymore? The answer is yes. He did stop. But why did he stop, though? He stopped because in his own experience, he came to a revelation. That famous bit that he said he went to Africa, he was out walking around in Africa, and he looked around, and a voice in his head said, do you see any N-words out here? And he said, no, I don't. And he said at that point he decided that never in his life would he call another black man the N-word.
Well, he was because a lot of Africans call that the American.
No, but I'm saying that was his revelation.
Yeah.
So anybody who says, well, Richard Pryor gave in to societal pressure doesn't know what they're talking about. First of all, there wasn't that pressure in the 70s and early 80s when he came to that revelation.
But it's still not there. A black man can sit there and use the N-word like...
Yeah, but that was Richard Pryor's own truth that came out. It wasn't put on him by any societal pressure or any idiots protesting him. So are you true to yourself? No, I don't think you are. Unless you were never a true comedian to begin with. Unless you were never a true stand-up comic. Gilbert Gottfried... Again, he died recently, obviously, but Gilbert Gottfried, when he was alive, when you listen, he did not care who he insulted. As a matter of fact, he made it a point of insulting everybody. He was Jewish, always with Jewish jokes. Never stopped talking about making fun of the Jews. God knows how many Hitler and Holocaust jokes he made. He
was I get it. Right? Oh, well, speaking of that then, Dave Chappelle does nothing to stray away from his beliefs of LGBT, transgenders. I get a sense that he doesn't like them, not because he doesn't like them. He doesn't like how they're permeating through black culture, through society.
Well, he said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think that is this an escalation and the result of Chappelle not staying on a Democrat plantation and being a proper overseer with leftist narratives? Because that's what it boils down to.
I don't think
they tried to cancel him because of that.
No. I understand that they tried to cancel him, but I don't think it's because he was under strict orders or anything. I think
I'm being sarcastic.
I understand that, but this particular this specific attack was just a crazy person. I don't think there was any political motivation behind it.
I think that's a fair point. I can't argue that.
Yeah.
I can't argue that.
In general, when Netflix employees tried to get they tried to pressure their own company into dropping Chappelle, and to Netflix's credit, they said we are not dropping Dave Chappelle.
You know, I've had a change of heart since then.
What's
that? Why? Because Dave Chappelle, like Adam Sandler and a few others, are probably the ones that they can count on for millions of downloads. And all their woke shows that they keep canceling like a month or two in, and they've done a lot of canceling. They just canceled $100 million project with that idiot.
Well, they just lost a lot of subscribers. Their stock price.
But my point is,
they're in bad shape.
I don't think it was about standing up to the woke as much as, dude, these numbers, just quickly give them the pink slip and start writing them up.
Well, I don't disagree with you that there was certainly a financial consideration, but for whatever reason, there wasn't a knee-jerk reaction like a lot of companies have had in recent years to just agree to the mob for whatever reason, right?
I think it's because of the downloads, and he's also black. Yeah,
I'm sure
it's easier to sit there and take a white guy out because everybody gets happy.
You're probably right in that it gives them a little bit of protection.
Oh, but at the same time,
listen, I saw a report from a local station in L.A. on the internet. It was, I think it was ABC. It may have been in L.A. I could be wrong. But the reporter was reporting on the Chappelle attack. And at the end, it said, and Dave Chappelle, of course, is a famous stand-up comedian who makes controversial jokes and has yet to apologize for jokes against transgender people. As if she was intimating, as if he somehow deserved to be attacked because he hasn't apologized for any of his jokes, which I ripped to shreds on Twitter. I was like, why would you even bring that up? I don't care if Chappelle was on there in the middle of trashing transgenders and was attacked by a transgender activist. I don't care. Much like I don't care if Will Smith was upset that Chris Rock was making fun of his wife's bald head. I don't care. When someone is a stand-up comedian, even if he isn't, if all he's doing is talking or she is talking, there is no justification, zero, for any sort of physical attack. You want to yell back at them? That's fine. You want to heckle them? That's fine. You want to walk out? Even better, but there's no justification. And that's I'll jump on your side of the fence a lot. That's where I find the left has lost its effing mind. It used to be 25, 30 years ago that the conservatives were the ones trying to silence people. Conservatives were the ones who were pushing family values and were trying to put labels on rock albums and were trying to like get the Dixie Chicks to shut up because they were anti-war.
You know what this does, John? It actually shows what the conservatives really want. They would go overboard. I'll be the first to concede that. But we do need to keep the lid shut on certain things until a certain age or for societal norms to be civilized. But comedians are the ones that none of that pertains to it. Because when John Madden came out, the John Madden game on Sega Genesis, the military's identity politics. Blacks hang with blacks, Latinos hang with Latinos, whites tend to hang with whites. It's self-segregated in the birthing. That's just a fact, people. You want to call me a liar, then you're
by the way, that,
and that's societal. So that's sociological.
Yes. Right. Yes. No matter how much people want to avoid it, it's true.
But Madden brought us all together. And when we played Madden in that birthing, I mean, even officers would come down every once in a while, the younger ones, the answers to Lieutenant JGs. And they'd always lose. So they kind of stopped coming down because within that ring, everything went. Now we treated the officers with respect and all that and across the line. But in Latino and black cultures, you don't say mama jokes, yeah? And whites tend to get beaten down and they know what they can and can't say. But inside that little ring, everything was to go. Even the whites towards the blacks. Once the blacks started cracking on the whites, then the white would start cracking, and it all stayed there, you know? And that's how the comedic world is. Meaning, like you said, it doesn't matter what they're cracking on, it's a joke. So let's end this with three questions for you. One of them's going to sound silly, but you yourself said it a second ago, leftists have lost their minds. You know? So, first, is this new justice system that we see in Democrat urban areas, I'm talking about the big cities, specifically Philadelphia, Los Angeles, New York City, commit the crime, don't do the time. Is this what we're seeing? I mean, is this Dave Chappelle incident all part of that? Because remember, it was not the LADA's office that charged him with the four misdemeanors. They referred it to the city attorney who charged him. The LADA said, we're not touching it. There is no felony here. What's your take on that question?
Well, specifically in the Chappelle case, I don't know. But in general, you're seeing the pendulum swing the other way, I think. So especially since minority communities are typically the ones involved in drug offenses and things like that, for a long time in this country, the pendulum was on the other end. They were getting overcharged, over-sentenced, and things like that.
Actually, now, they weren't.
They were.
What would happen, it was disproportionate. People had no clue what they're talking about when it comes to that Clinton crime bill.
I'm not talking about that specifically. I'm saying in general, like if the pendulum's supposed to be here for justice, right? Initially, for things like drug offenses and things, like it would be up here. Like people would.
I will concede that to a point, right? But I am more like you with the pay to women. There's a lot more data that people aren't looking at. So here's my issue. My issue is they're guilty. The problem to solve it isn't to incarcerate them. It's why is this happening?
See, why is it a crime to begin with?
No, I'm not talking about the crime. If it's a crime, it's a crime, period. That's a different topic to talk about, to look at, you know? But the question is, why are these crimes consistently being committed, and what can we do to change it? We always look at changing that from a wrong perspective. I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong, but that's a different issue. That's going to be a crime. That's beside the point. It is a crime right now.
What I'm saying is, I think what you're seeing now is that the pendulum has swung all the way to the other end. So whereas before, you were getting ridiculously high bail, you were getting ridiculously long sentences for the same crime, even disparate among racial groups, what you're seeing now is the complete opposite. You're seeing bail reform.
I get you. I guess I just disagree. It's not the exact opposite. It's just out of this world. You're letting people who are assaulting and killing others going out on bail.
By the way, don't misunderstand. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying if you're looking at it historically, look, man, pendulums go like this until they settle in the middle, right?
We've been moving left, and we're more leftist than we've ever been in the history of this country. Yeah. You can see it in the laws. You can see it in the government, the size of the government. You can see it in the kickbacks, the lobby, everything. It's a free-for-all right now in this country, you know? And who are the victims? We are. But who are the idiots? We are, because we're the ones who keep reelecting these idiots. You know? Now, you said it was crazy and wild out there, and I kept pushing that. With a disinformation governance board. Yeah, it's like that's something that belongs in Nazi Germany. You know, but Joe Biden and the Democrats have come up with it.
I can't believe we're even...
Exactly. With a disinformation governance board, maybe not today, but tomorrow, will they go after Chappelle? Can't be talking about transgenders that way. Sure. And other comedians in this new culture?
Sure. Absolutely, yeah. I am one 100% against any sort of, I colloquially known as the Ministry of Truth. You're trying to tell me Elon Musk buys Twitter, promises to let everybody on who wants to be on. The only speech that will be disallowed is the one that the law, like that officers give him a warrant for, right? Which is the way it should be. That's the way Gab is, for example, right? You're trying to tell me less than a month later, the plans are announced for a Ministry of Disinformation, Truth, whatever you want to call it. Please, it's transparent and it's obvious, okay? Now, it's politics. Who's in charge right now? The Democrats.
Well, it's illegal.
What do they get to do? What do they get to do? They get to put out an agency. Now, how will it survive muster? I hope not. Unless, but you never know, because what if they make it a, we don't have the power to censor anybody, but we have the power to inform people when there's been misinformation out there. So we're not going to, we don't have any power to censor anyone.
Look, Big John, here's the problem, is a lot of this stuff is having a backlash, meaning all these things that were meant to get white or equalized or whatever the term is, it's coming back to bite black and brown Americans in the butt just because it's the law.
It always does.
Exactly. And I think that this disinformation board, the only hope here was just to get it going, meaning it sticks in the sand. They know it's not going to go anywhere. They just want to keep that stick in the sand, to keep it in place to eventually add to it. Because that's how government always works.
Right. Yeah? Because once you pass something, you'll never get it unpassed.
This has
right?
not been passed. This was just
no, but
me.
I'm saying, to your yeah, point, yeah. once something... Like Milton Friedman used to have a catchphrase that was actually clever. He said, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary government program.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what this is, right? So, look.
But this could be the first temporary one. This is so over the top. I think this will it's kind of like inflation, kind of like a bad economy. There's certain things you just can't lie your way out of because it's just that obvious.
But you can't because people, generally speaking, are ignorant. So, for example, I'm against the FCC. I don't think there should be an FCC, all right? So how did the FCC start in this country? It started out regulating frequency bands. It was it was just a technical office that was meant to say that two stations couldn't operate on the same signal. So
they didn't want them to, but there was a legit reason. But what happened?
But what's the FCC now? It's a censorship organization, right? Exactly. Essentially, it's become a censorship organization.
I miss the days of revolutions every 50 to 100
years. Yeah, it's almost like you need it because all of a sudden – but people forget that. So when you ask them about the FCC now, oh, we need it. We can't have children watch bare breasts on television.
It's the too big to fail.
Well, it's mentality. Not that.
It's just that mentality. We rule everything. They want to keep the status – my point is they want to keep the status quo as they grow in power. You know,
government.
It's one of those classic things, John, 15 years from now, that everybody talks about. We're going to look up and go, what happened to all our rights?
I've said that all along because I've been screaming about this stuff for 25, 30 years. And it's like, I'm a free speech absolutist, right? So as much as, whatever you thought of the Dixie Chicks, it was ridiculous for people to try to kick them off radio stations. And what did I hear conservatives tell me back then? We're not doing it. The government's not doing it. Private entities are keeping
them. And it was. That was the case.
Right?
The problem is what's happened since Obama got elected is the corporations are just caving in and people are going after. Rush had a great topic on this. He talked about multiple times because he had a lot invested in it. And he whittled it down to like a couple dozen people on Twitter acting as if thousands because they said this to other advertisers. I think they lost one or two. And the advertisers that they lost, Carbon something, one of the backup, they lost a lot of wealth with their product's value after they left Rush.
It's like, again, I'm old enough to understand all these things. Do you remember Married with Children? What actually saved Married with Children? At one point, there was a woman in Michigan. Her name was Terry Ricalta, who started a campaign. She said, I walked in and my children were watching this filthy show, blah, 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 right? And she wrote all the advertisers. And all the advertisers sent a letter into the Married with Children producers and said, unless you change this, we're going to pull our support. Do you know what they did? And credit to Fox Network, which was a new network at the time, and the producers, they said, we're not changing anything. As a matter of fact, after all, like Pepsi and all those guys pulled out, they doubled down. They made the same raunchy episodes, and they started charging twice as much for advertising time.
Right, because it was a popular show, and that's like Rush.
And guess what happened with within a month? All their advertising was sold out.
Yeah, that advertiser came back, Carbon something. They came back to Rush.
Right.
Yeah, and,
right.
And that's what advertisers need to do. But this corporations should
right.
do. They need to stand their ground.
Right, but I agree with you, by the way. But I'm also trying to illustrate that it's always happened, right? In 87, it was the conservatives trying to shut down
married
children. Stop. Today, it's the liberals trying to...
It's technology has exponentially grown these outlier types. Like this woman being an outlier back in the 80s. To now, and that's what Rush was talking about, how technology has encouraged this. As I've told you before in different podcasts, we are still in the Wild West. All this will calm down, but it's going to take a pushback and the pendulum swinging back a little. And that's starting to happen. All right, question number two. What happens, Big John, if the next attack is successful? On any
Oh my goodness. I don't know.
Oh, I know. The pendulum will completely shift. It will be a nuclear going off.
Well, yeah.
The left will lose everything.
Listen, you'd hate to say, well, I hope so, because you don't
want
to...
No, I don't hope so, but that's what would happen.
Yeah, I'm saying, obviously you don't want to see anyone attack. Would it shift the pendulum the other way?
I'm talking elections. For example, they're winning right now, but with the economy failing, with inflation, with crime high, it's kind of like, and that's what I'm referring to. It's never one issue. It's a combination of all these bad issues.
Yeah.
So I think in this era, in this moment, not when I say era, I don't mean the past few years. I mean, this moment, since Joe Biden became president, if there's another attack and it's successful, the Democrats are toast because they've gone from winning the election to the downhill. And that tends to happen because it's cyclical.
Well, it's cyclical, and I was going to say, even if you pulled it away from national politics and local politics, I grew up in New York in the 70s, which was a waste town. You couldn't walk through Times Square without...
Yeah, crime is what got Giuliani elected.
Well, yeah, and it was about 15 years of that before Giuliani got elected. New York, of course, being one of the progressive capitals in the United States, went through all that, if you look at it culturally, gave Clint Eastwood new life? It was when he started playing Dirty Harry. What was Dirty Harry? Dirty Harry was a cultural reaction to the lax enforcement of law in big cities, right? Dirty Harry, the guy who would just shoot the guy dead instead of bringing him in, right?
Yeah. So we need more Dirty Harrys.
Right. So my point is, I've lived through these cycles. And then when Giuliani got in, after 10, 15 years of Giuliani's nonsense, it became too... oppressive.
What are you talking about? Giuliani got the crime down. I mean, that was his whole show.
No, he got the crime down, but then it went too much in the other direction, right? So then it was
because this is what
lived through it. For example, they started shutting down. They started shutting down.
The only thing that came out of Giuliani was a stop and frisk, meaning his old holdover from his era. And when you polled black communities, this is what the media never talked about. They're like, we love stop and frisk. Why?
It's unconstitutional.
That was never taken to court to see if it was unconstitutional or not. It was never taken to court. They just pulled it because Giuliani was no longer the mayor. What was it? Bloomberg probably at the time, if I'm correct.
Bloomberg followed.
Is Chappelle the greatest comedian of his generation? Let me give you a hint from my perspective. I say yes, only just for example. I like Bill Burr. But you can tell the man holds back.
Burr holds back?
Oh, God, yeah. I've seen every one of his shows on Netflix. And what I'm saying is he's holding himself back. He's not saying certain jokes, certain ways, certain things. And to me, it kind of taints him because he's so good. I'm like, fucking just be yourself the whole time. And don't get me wrong. I love Bill Burr.
Yeah,
you've never seen his F is for Family.
Yeah, I've seen it on Netflix.
America, watch it. It's hilarious. And it shows life as it was in the 70s.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the Bill Burr I got to know in New York because
we get the Bill Burr. Yeah. He's Chappelle, the greatest comedian of his generation.
I don't know if he's the greatest comedian of our generation. I would say he's one of the top three. Definitely.
I can't argue. There is no greatest.
I would say Chappelle is in the conversation. Chris Rock is in the conversation. For me personally, Patrice O'Neal was in that conversation.
I mean, who are still alive.
Oh, who are still alive. So Chris Rock would definitely go in there. Chappelle definitely would go in there. And then there's guys that you find, you know, that are in there. You know, like a lot of people may or may not know him, but every other comedian cites him as a godfather is Dave Attell. He's a certain type of comedian.
No, Dave. You say it's kind of a Dave?
Dave Attell.
Attell. Okay, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he used to do a show on comedy called Comedy Central. I think it was Up After Midnight or Up All Night, something like that, where he would just go around to bars. And, like, a lot of comics, when they say, well, who do you get your cadence from? They'll all say Dave Attell. But in terms of public perception, I would say Chappelle, Chris Rock. Those old enough to remember Eddie Murphy might say Eddie Murphy.
I thought Eddie Murphy was too vulgar for me. I mean, I'm a sailor, but I just thought, I'll never forget he had one segment about taking a dump and having half a dump. And I'm like, really? You got to go down that road? I mean, even I'm a sailor. He's like, come on, man. Anyway, let's wrap this up. I found it a little surprising that you agreed with me more in terms of the pendulum, the attacking, the comedians, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's because the comedian is untouchable, meaning laughter is the best medicine, and if we can't laugh at ourselves, who can we laugh at?
I certainly hope so.
Now, leftism only wants comedians to make fun of conservatives. That's the only exception. I'm not even sounding far-fetched, but that's kind of what it's boiled down to. The reason they've been after Dave Chappelle is because he attacks everybody. And see, as a Latino, and you look at me and I'm white, I have white relatives, black relatives, brown relatives. When a comedian attacks every race, I crack up because to me, he's not holding back. But I do get turned off when the comedian only attacks one side. I'm like, I don't have time for this crap. Everybody's an asshole. You know, attack them all. If not, you're the racist. Look in the damn mirror. You know? So, with that said, I said I'd give you the last word on Lied to. But let's move on to a topic I know you weren't too thrilled about, but I think it's pretty good. And the public seems to love it. And I would guess you don't care for it too much because it's kind of trivial. But this is what society with too much tech and not enough time to do anything worthwhile, but too much time while you're in my patient. Ryan Tannehill and mentoring.
Yeah.
John, do you have it there with you? Do you want to tell the public what was the exact quote? I think it's in there.
Basically, Tannehill, so the Titans drafted Malik Willis to be the, quote, possible quarterback of the future. And people just assume he'd serve an apprenticeship for a year or two under Tannehill. And Tannehill's quote was, I'm not here to mentor the guy. I'm not here to mentor him. Which apparently...
Said, we're competing against each other. The reason I want to read the quote is important because I believe it was
taken
out of context.
Okay, go ahead.
We're competing against each other. We're watching the same tape. We're doing the same drills. I don't think it's my job to mentor him, but... if he learns from me along the way, then that's a great thing.
Yeah.
So what everybody heard is, it's not my job to mentor him. I just wanted the audience to hear it all in
context. Right, okay.
Hearing it that way, Big John, was he being a jerk or was he just being honest with, like, hey, it's not my job to help the guy replace
him? Yeah, it's tough for me to say, and I'll tell you why. I came up in business on Wall Street. And Wall Street is the most cutthroat arena you could ever, like, you know, short of being part of a drug cartel, I think there's nothing more cutthroat than working on Wall Street in the pits, in the traders' pits, on the traders' desks.
Right.
Everything you saw in Wolf of Wall Street is true, by the way.
Oh, I believe it. I've read enough articles to understand. Especially, I could only imagine. And maybe you were there for part of it.
I was.
How bad that industry was during the Coke frenzy. Remember when Coke in the 80s just exploded on the scene?
I caught the tail end of it where I was like naive, like young, 23, 24-year-old starting out on Wall Street. And I'd go into meetings where people would just lay out bumps. And before the meeting started, they would all take bumps. Now I'm straight edge. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. And they looked at me like I was some sort of freak because I was the only one who was straight. But then they figured out I was the only one who could make decisions because I was straight. You know what I mean?
So that helped. Then all of a sudden, you became the person, Dr. John, he's straight.
Well, I became the manager because everybody else was too busy, you know. But my point being that even in that environment, my managers raised me, if that's the right word, to say you always train your replacement. Always. Because that's what's the best for the company. And in training your replacement, you're improving not only the company, but yourself. Because people will recognize your value. Now,
I agree, John.
That's old school. But that's old school.
The caveat, it's not, it is old school. It's how it should be done. However, sports is different.
I was going to say, now how much...
Sports, you're not training somebody for the betterment of the company. You're training somebody...
To take your job.
Who could take your job.
Yeah.
Now, that said, that happens in the business world a lot. Yeah. But it's different when it's one position on that team and they tell you you got to train your replacement. You know,
I don't think the audience,
Joe Montana refused to work with Steve Young. Brett Favre, I ain't helping him.
Oh, man, that was famous. That was like,
Casey Keenum. With Dwayne Haskins, now I highlighted this, and I want to get back to it, but not right now.
Yeah.
But Keenum to Dwayne Haskins, Tom Brady to Jimmy Garoppolo, Flacco to Lamar Jackson, and then Denver to Drew Locke.
I was going
to
say Tom Brady with anybody in New England. He didn't want to
bother. Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love, Ben Roethlisberger to Mason Rudolph. And let's go back to somebody who was once my idol. I looked up to. I loved to death just because he's a jolly guy. He's actually got a seedy side of ignorance and stupidity to him. And I'll give you a hint. Hollywood Henderson said he couldn't spell cat if he spotted in the C and the T. Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
He's a big hypocrite. Yeah. Today he'll talk about this, that. Well, back then, he was an a-hole towards Cliff Stout, Mark Malone, and David Woodley. Publicly and privately. He didn't want to train. People don't realize Terry Bradshaw had a terrible relationship with his head coach, Chuck Noll, the final couple of years, because Terry had an elbow injury that was extremely, extremely, extremely slow to heal. And people, back then, there was not, what did they call it, arthroscopic surgery?
Where they
put a little hole in there. That wasn't around back then. They had to literally cut everything open. Well, he wasn't healing right. So he wasn't being friendly towards his backups because Chuck Noll was ready to move on. But he's one of the biggest jerks of them all. My point being in all these names is that it's not unheard of.
No,
so Kurt Warner comes out and says, I will never understand the I'm not here to mention the next guy mentality for all you young QBs and blah, 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 blah. But here's my point. I can't understand it. My take with Kurt that I'll forgive him is he's that uber fundamentalist in a good way. He knows not to throw it on you, but that's who he is. And I think that's where it comes from. But I'm like, Kurt, your whole NFL career was an outlier. I understand what you're saying, but you're wrong. What's your take?
Like I said, it's tough for me to say because I understand what you're saying and I agree with you about the
– Hold on. Stop.
What?
Don't take it from your Wall Street perspective. Take it from when you were a wrestler in high school and
that's
your coach says, I want you to train your replacement.
That's what I'm saying. I understand the competitiveness. Look, me personally, I always sat – with the guy who was behind me. I always sat with my teammates, and we talk about stuff.
But we're from in an era where that was usually regulated by our coaches, wasn't it?
To some extent.
Yeah.
To some extent. But it's also the personality. Like the way you said, Kurt Warner probably feels the way he does. And listen, in his career, Warner did act as a mentor to a lot of people. Eli Manning, Mark Bulger, all these guys, right?
Yes, he did.
You know.
I didn't put it in the notes, but what I did discover, he was not happy when they benched him and put Eli in.
Oh, yeah, because he was winning.
And he kind of made some comments there. So
he did.
Mr. Pristine here wasn't so innocent. And trust me, there's no better human being in the NFL from an outsider looking in than Kurt Warner. So I say it with half jest, but
Right. Warner thought he would have that whole season with the Giants. And then he figured if I mentor Eli, people see that I'm a good teammate, then I'll go somewhere else and I'll start. And he was upset that they only gave him half a season, basically. And they were winning at the time. They had a winning record with
Warner. It was like 5-3, if I remember.
Or 6-2, something like that. And then they benched him. But so I understand that. My personal personality is I will always give help to anybody who asks me. That's just the way I'm wired, right? So I don't mean it to sound like a good guy, but if you show me, hey, can you show me how to do this?
Oh, no, John, I'm in agreement. You know me. I've talked about that.
Absolutely.
It's my role and my job to mentor.
Yeah.
But, again, I pride myself on looking at the big picture, understanding things from – or trying to understand things, and most definitely looking at it from every angle. And
yeah, so I don't hold it against Tannehill, if that's your question. I don't hold it against him. I don't think he was being a bad teammate or anything. I think he probably, though – just from a PR perspective, he probably should have kept his mouth shut.
I agree.
Yeah.
Some things is like, just why do you say that, bro?
Yeah, just nod your head and say, yeah, sure, I'll mentor him, whatever, you know. And then
he didn't have to say, I would have said, well, technically it's the coach's job to do the mentoring, but I'm there also, you know. I am also there also. We're in the same room together. I go, at the end of the day, this is my job, and I plan on keeping it, but if I get hurt, I still want to win so we can make it a playoff. I mean, there's so many ways. He said it just – I got what he said. You got what he said. So did the player, Darius Butler. This what y'all fake mad about today? Tannehill is 100% – I love these Twitter talks. And talking, you know,
by the way, is that your black accent?
No, I guess so. Yeah. This what y'all fake mad about today? Tannehill is 100% right here. He has one job. Be the starting quarterback for the Titans. If he chooses to mentor Malik Willis along the way, that's good on him, but by no means an obligation. John, I don't know how to pronounce it. Jonnu, is it Jonnu Smith or Jonnu Smith?
Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith, former Titans, former Patriots and Titans tight end. And Darius Butler, for the record, Patriots, Panthers, and Colts safety. So these aren't players who had 1 or 2 years only.
Right.
So Jonnu Smith. It's a highly competitive league, folks. I'm sure little homie know that. I got to repeat it because I don't know if I can understand myself. I'm sure little homie know that. And if he didn't, then he doesn't belong. Ryan, one of the best teammates I've been around at any level, and he didn't mentor me, but I damn sure learned a lot from him. To me, that's a perfect answer because based on what you said and what I have believed, that's actually how it happens. But here's an important quote. It's from a head coach. Yeah. And these are the guys who probably want their players to mentor. Mike Tomlin, successful Super Bowl winning Steelers head coach. You know, it's good when it occurs, but it's certainly not necessary, Tomlin said. That's why we have offensive coordinators, quarterback coaches, assistant quarterback coaches, people who are employed, and their sole focus is the development of players. See, to me, that's my take. And to me, reporters stir up the pot because they know this, but they don't want to go down that road. So poor Ryan Tannehill, and I'm no fan of Tannehill. You know me. I've talked about it. They overpaid for an average QB.
Right.
He's a great – he's what you call that, middle-of-the-road NFL starter. And again, so I am no fan of his. The quicker they get rid of him, the quicker they can go to a Super Bowl. You know, but it's not going to happen. So those are three important takes. We've talked about the quarterbacks. I want to ask you a few questions here. A couple of comments first. Tannehill did text and welcome Willis.
Right.
Tannehill was not told by the team they were drafting Willis. So you talk about some disrespect. That's disrespect because I'm a communicator, John. My employees used to tell me, damn, William, you do tell us too much. But that's the military. Cross-training, you know in the loop. You know we're not trying to be malicious. It's all up front. You know? So he wasn't told by the team they were drafting him. I thought that was wrong by Vrabel and the general manager. And at the conclusion of the 2022 season, the Titans can move on from Tannehill's contract. His contract is not salary cap friendly this year. So even though they were looking at Watson and Rodgers during the offseason, they were just window shopping.
Right.
There was not – if you thought there were no takers for Baker Mayfield, at least he has the – I'm still young. Tannehill's 32. Willis was drafted towards an eye – Willis was drafted with an eye toward 2023 or beyond. My question to you, Brother Girthy John, is let me grab it. You've already answered as a team leader if it's a responsibility to mentor his successor.
Right.
Tannehill did say, what are your thoughts on this? And this is probably why he said it without thinking. That whole press conference did not deal with Malik Willis and mentoring. That was just like an off-the-cuff question thrown at him. The whole press conference was about Tannehill and that devastating. And it was a devastating loss.
Sure.
And this is the second season or third season where they were really in the mix, seen as serious contenders, and this was their quickest exit. Tannehill just came out of a dark place, thus showing he has his own issues to worry about versus a backup's needs. Do you think because of the situation he's in, it was an unfair question, and the situation he's in, he has no business even thinking about mentoring outside of worrying more about his own play?
Was it a fair question? Yes, it's a fair question. And should he be thinking about it? Yes. Like, you can't have it both ways, right? If you think you don't need to be a mentor because you're competing for a job, then you shouldn't be surprised that you're competing for a job. You know what I mean? You can't have it both ways. You can't say it's not my job to mentor him and he shouldn't be going after my job. You can't have it both ways. So,
No, he's not saying that.
But I'm saying, like, if you said it was fair, and I said, yeah, it's a fair question. Yeah, absolutely. It's a fair question.
It's a fair question. But are the fans and players, who a lot of players came out and criticized them. I didn't write them down, but they're in the notes. You know, some big-name players. It wasn't just Kurt Warner. But do you think these players, I believe they are, and especially the fans, I think they're on their morality soapbox versus would they actually mentor their replacement? I'm not saying they wouldn't, but nobody knows. It's easy to be on the soapbox of morality and doing what's right.
Especially if you're a retired player, it becomes very easy. I think this is way too much of a big deal. Like, I think it was a fair question. He answered it incorrectly, in my opinion. Like we said before, he should have answered it a little bit more tactfully. And I think that the people who are outraged that he said what he said are ridiculous. You know, of course if on some level, I could almost respect the fact that he's so competitive that he won't even give you the politically correct answer. You know what I mean? Like so competitive that he's like, no, I don't plan on ever seeing that guy start like Rodgers. Why do people assume it's okay for Rodgers to say screw Jordan Love? I don't care what happens to him.
Oh, no, they attacked him too. But it seems like the Ryan Tannehill attack really.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think it's overblown.
Final question, and it's not based off of Tannehill or mentorship, but it's tied in. Tannehill's only 33. Theoretically, he could stick around for another 2 to 6 years based on where we're at technologically and what players are playing up to now. His contract salary is cap friendly after this year. To me, all that is beside the point. Because my question to you is, can Malik Willis, as raw as he is, even be ready for the 2023 season?
No. I don't think so.
What do you think? You think 2 to 3 years minimum?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, unless something crazy happens and he's like a super student, like, you know. Like, reports were that the Seahawks didn't even consider him because they felt he wasn't anywhere near NFL ready. That he's got crazy athleticism, he's a good athlete, but he's nowhere near ready. And that's why they didn't even pick a late round pick on him.
Do you think it was just the Seahawks? I mean, the kid dropped to the third round. I think the teams actually had him properly slotted. It was the media, the race.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I just think it was the Seahawks were the only ones who verbalized it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So that's why. So you have to cite the people who actually admitted to it, right? So they said that on their board he was nowhere near NFL ready. So I'll take them at their word. That's why they didn't take it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I saw a lot of racial arguments on social media.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case anymore.
But that's my point is, this had to do with skills.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with race. But that's how things go in this new world.
I think I don't even know if that's an actual thing because like right now there's no stigma around being a black quarterback. Look, honestly.
Dude, stop. Justin Fields. Every black quarterback that's come out the last 2 to 3 years, if they're not starting or in line to start, there's a faction that's saying it's because of his skin color. And my take is, dude, they drafted him to start.
No,
they don't put him in there on day one doesn't mean they don't want him. You know,
What I'm saying is I don't think being a black quarterback is a detriment now. If anything, it's a plus, like because the perception, whether it's lazy analysis like we talked with
– Lazy Thomas analysis is what it is.
Right? The perception is that black quarterbacks are now the most – capable ones of running these RPO motion offenses, right? So I don't think it's a disadvantage to be a black quarterback. So I don't think the race thing had anything to do with it.
I had nothing to do with it.
I think, like, most
of you said,
yeah. Like,
you know what's funny, John? We are entering – actually, we already entered it. Players are the biggest and the fastest they've ever been.
Yeah.
The days of the pure rushing quarterback are over. Case in point is Lamar Jackson last year. He's only been in the league, what, 3-4 years, I think? But the kid's taken a beating.
Yeah.
And it finally culminated last year. He missed serious time. Then, and when I say serious time, it's key games. Kyler Murray.
That's the more perfect example because he didn't run it all last year.
I think Russell Wilson – this is why I love Russell Wilson. I love – not because he has a hot wife. I don't know how his wife is. I just said that. I've seen pictures of him with women. I'm like, damn! But anyway, he's just the prototype quarterback who knows when to use – he, I guess, pocket presence beyond anybody at his age. You know? And then so you look at him, and then you look at Patrick Mahomes. All the rave reviews we heard about him the year he wasn't starting and how Alex Smith was mentoring him and this kid's going to be ready. And on the flip side, we don't hear that about Trey Lance, small school, you know? So there's things that individuals can pick up on. And that's why I agree with Tom Casale. It's just lazy analysis. You've got to look at each situation. People were shocked. They weren't black. I had some Mexican friends who were here in Southern California, whether they're Latino but Mexican descent. When they saw Andrew Luck running, how big he was, like, damn, I don't think you're a good runner. Well, maybe if you actually read an article instead of just being a Sunday viewer thinking you're freaking John Madden analyzing every game, you would know.
And everybody thought that Griffin was
Griffin was a rusher, but what they didn't realize is
he was a great
Griffin
pocket
was
passer.
Rushing to his detriment.
Yeah.
And that's why he's out of the league. Body took a beat down, and then he lost confidence. I thought if Griffin – and again, we talked about this two podcasts ago. Griffin's downfall was a product of Daniel Snyder, Mike Shanahan, and Robert Griffin himself. But I don't blame Griffin as much. He was a young, mature kid.
Yeah.
Daniel Snyder gave him too much power and say by having the ear of the owner, and Mike Shanahan didn't do enough to protect him and teach him to be a better pocket passer. But that said, we're in agreement. Malik Willis – naturally gifted, naturally talented. He has a minimum of 2 years, 2 to 3 years. But that said, I think they'll bring him along slowly, and he'll be that what's the term, that trick quarterback, the guy that comes in every so often.
Yeah, trick, a slash quarterback, yeah.
And there you have it, people. John believes it is a player's responsibility, and damn the torpedoes, they better mention. I'm kidding. That's not what John said. But we both agree that he and I mentor, but sports is different.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a topic I have yet to see anybody who is not a black American talking about this, and that is the Black News Channel. Now, John picked this topic. I was a little shocked. I tossed it up there. As everybody knows, I'm into identity politics, my grandmother being black, my mother be looking like a little Korean Asian, me looking like some people say, are you Asian? Are you this? Are you that? Are you white? Yeah. So anyway, I found the Black News Channel fascinating. And here's why. We're short on time here, so I'm going to give a quick rundown and we'll get comments back and forth. Well, I guess my first question to you, Big John. Did you know there was a Black News Channel?
No. That's why I found this so fascinating when you brought it up as a potential topic. I was aware that on my cable system, we have Fios here in New York. There's something called All Black. A-L-L-B-L-K, All Black. And that's the Black, it's like BET TV, you know, Black Entertainment Television. It's another channel that only features, you know, Black-centric shows and topics and stuff. And I was aware of that channel, which I thought was kind of weird, because if you have BT, All Black seems to be, you know. When you told me there's like the Black News Channel, I was like, wait a second. Not that I'm surprised it exists, but if I didn't see it in New York, I'm figuring, where would I see it? You know what I mean?
Well, let me give you a little.
I was shocked to know it existed, let alone that it folded already.
I had heard of it when it first came out, and then I forgot about it until I read that it was going under. I don't watch black networks. I don't watch Latino networks, meaning novellas and things like that. I watch them when family's in town and they want to watch it.
Right.
I watch what I like, and that tends to be more Americanized type shows.
Right.
You know, it was originally launched in 2020 as an independent cable news channel, and it was founded to give black culture – greater reach, a greater perspective, because they felt it was underrepresented on legacy cable news channels. And when right. I say legacy, I'm talking about cable. You have the four networks. If you count PBS, then you have cable, not counting and satellite TV is part of that cable process. And they want to reach the larger audience with stories that showed a greater perspective about who Black America is. Ironically, it was back by a minority, and here's the sports tie, the people who say, need to be talking about sports. It was, the largest investor was billionaire Jacksonville Jaguars owner Shahid Khan. The channel launched after Khan made a $50 million investment in 2019. That made him the majority stakeholder. CBS Media Ventures was brought in to partner in with advertising sales. Right. Now, here's the problem, John. They had limited distribution. They were in about 52 million homes, but they were not top tier. I'll have you explain that in a moment. In contrast, CNN and Fox News are in more than 80 million homes, and they are top tier channels. Do you want me, or do you want to explain to the audience what a top tier channel is?
You might as well go ahead. You're on
the right. A top tier channel is when you sign up for cable, you're paying for certain packages, whether right. you like it or not, period. CNN and Fox News are part of those packages. It's kind of like the golden goose. So if they're in 80 million homes and they get a quarter for every dollar, you do the numbers. We're talking multi-millions here. It's how they can afford to stay in business, how they can afford to go full-blown leftist and lose their audience. You know, and I say that about CNN because Fox makes a killing in advertisers because they're the number one. They're always competing to be the number one rated network on all of cable, you know. So they were in limited distribution, 52 million homes. They weren't in top tier. So that means their sole way of generating revenue was through advertising.
Right. Which, by the way, that's where network TV is too, right? Advertising.
Right. But I would imagine they are top tier in some sense. But they're free. They're the only three that are free. ABC, you can put rabbit ears on and you can listen to those three networks for free. They're free TV. Cable isn't. You have to pay for cable.
Yes.
You have the cheapest level, you know. But that said, I have seen the wars where call your satellite dish up because they're not going to have Channel 8, CBS, you know, one of the freebies out there.
Right.
So it's a very convoluted process. But at the end of the day, CNN, Fox, and ESPN, for example, they're top tier. We paid for. We're keeping them alive. As conservatives and libertarians, even if we don't watch these liberal networks, we're keeping them alive. That and airports for CNN. However, its founder was J.C. Watson and another individual, but the key player here is J.C. Watson because he's a Black conservative. And he wanted this to focus, again, Black Americans culturally. Now, here's the kicker. They started out as a full-blown leftist network, but all the stories that originally started with this were because J.C. Watson is a Republican and a conservative. So I'm assuming they're competitors, leftist networks or not. It's like they had a Black guy from the get-go. Even though they were full-blown leftists when they started and ended, they were seen as a conservative. I heard this one young Black man who has one of these race hustling groups, for lack of a better word, talking about, well, it failed because it was J.C. Watts, it was all conservative. Mark Lamont Hill, Charles Blow, those are the two biggest names, and they're not liberals. They're hardcore socialist loving leftists who hate everything white. I mean, that's pretty much their world. Kelly Wright, Fred Hickman, Sharon Reed, Aisha C. Mills. Some of these names I've heard of, some of them I had to go research them. You know me, I research everything. You just check some of their Twitter accounts. They're leftists. You know, so it was a leftist dream if you're, if you buy into the Democrat narrative. And it got nowhere. At one point, John, they had an average viewership of 10,000 people. KFL Today, the company I used to earn, we were 12 million a month, 16 million viewers a month. And this was back in the early, late 1990s, early 2000s, when the internet wasn't even what we know today.
Right.
So to see these numbers, is it a wonder they failed? And what actually piqued your interest in adding on to what you were talking about earlier with this story?
Well, there's a lot of things that piqued my interest. First of all, when you decide that you're going to be appealing to just one very specific demographic,
13% America.
Okay. There you go. That was going to be my point. You're, in essence, like, look, we're talking, you know, there's going to be liberal guilty white liberals who will tune in just because they feel they're supporting a cause. Fair enough, but it's not going to amount to anything. So one problem is you're excluding, for the most part, nearly 85% of a potential audience by saying, you know, look, Fox does the same thing when they say, well, we're basically appealing to conservatives because that's half the country. Same thing with CNBC, for example, right? But here's the problem. There's inherent virtues and vices in both those approaches. So, for example, Air America, which was supposed to be the answer to Fox a couple of years ago, failed miserably. And they had
that was about 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
now.
But hold on.
So the audience understands Air America was their slew of radio shows going on the air, and it flamed out almost immediately.
It was a horrible failure. Yeah, it was a complete failure. And they had their top people on. What people?
Hardcore leftists.
It wasn't just like, oh, college kids went on and talked stuff. They had their whoever they had that was famous, like Maddow and those people, right?
But the whole purpose was the counter rush and the flurry of the Hannitys that were coming into the world.
Yes, absolutely.
That popularity was just surging.
Yes. So here's what we've learned: conservatives are much more likely to sit and watch a Rush, a Hannity, a Fox News than liberals are going to sit and watch a CNBC, a CNN, listen to an Air America. It seems to be something in their makeup.
No, not at all. Specifically, you're right, but you have to remember, the reason these shows were able to explode is there was no venue for them before they came into existence. And Fox News Channel, even though there's OAN, it's still very limited. Newsmax is mostly through its app. You know, it's still limited. At the time, Fox was the only conservative network. You know, Rush was the only conservative speaker. So these people got to explode. And because we have been shifting center left since the 60s onward, and why Trump became president, there's a lack of leadership out there for conservatives. That's why these conservative bastions have exploded. And to an extent, are still succeeding. Leftism is still too fragmented. That, and I don't have proof, I've never bothered to look it up, but something in my gut has always told me, conservatives are the ones who will actually go buy it. I will go buy a product to support a company. My friends who are leftists will not. To their own side.
It's kind of weird.
And I just have anecdotal evidence on that, but I see it a lot.
It's kind of weird. Like, even in marketing, I couldn't tell you exactly why that is. For example, I think that leftists, liberals, however you want to describe them, are more likely to boycott somebody than they are to support somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, they're angry. They're just born angry.
Right. So, for example, the latest thing is nobody wants to, they're not letting Chick-fil-A's open all over the place, right? Because they're allegedly anti-homosexual. Even though Chick-fil-A was the first restaurant chain to go feed the victims and the families.
Right, they've won those core battles. Mayors have come in and said, you're not going to build here. And
So I might be convinced to agree with you in terms of, but I'm saying, like, I think it's also the makeup of people. Like you said, if conservatives are better off financially, they have more disposable income, so they're better able to support the sponsors of the shows they tend to watch.
Not at all. John, there's just as many. I know just as many poor conservatives as I do.
No, but I'm saying if you look at conservatives, especially true prior to Trump, conservatives had a higher medium income, I think, than the average liberal who tended to be a union worker, say, or a day laborer or something.
John, I guess I can't argue that because I don't know, but I guess how I view the scope of things in a big umbrella, anecdotally speaking, leftist politicians don't give shit to charities. That's documented because they release all the taxes.
I don't know about that.
No, I do. This is fact.
Okay, fair enough.
Hold on. Conservatives do. And to me, that's the mentality of the average conservative. We'll give, we'll take, we give more to charities. We're more compassionate. But we're also in the belief of we're going to teach you the fish, not give you a fish. I don't believe leftists are compassionate. Ask Dave Chappelle. I don't believe leftists give. And I think what you see with the Black News Channel 13% of the country is black. They were, it's a hard leftist approach. Mark Lamont Hill hates everything white. Charles Blow hates everything white. I don't care if you're a hardcore leftist. After a couple of episodes, I got to turn this crap on. So when you have something that starts out with hate, begatting more hate, your numbers are going to diminish. I'm not saying they're right or wrong in what their arguments are, but when you sit there and attack one culture for one color, and here's why I say this. When I went to college, and I graduated in 97, so I don't know if this data has changed, but 70% of black-owned products, like rap music and things of that nature, were bought by whites.
Yeah, of course.
And my point is, you can't crack on your audience and expect to survive.
Oh, yes, there's truth to that. But, like, I did some quick research before the show just to see what it is. So, yes, the black population is 13% of the United States, mostly concentrated. About half of that is concentrated in the southern states.
No. Mostly in urban centers.
Yeah,
it's
but
spread
in the,
out in the south.
Yeah, but it's in the southern. 52% is in the southern urban areas, like Atlanta. You know,
yeah,
like
that, yeah, very right, small.
Right? So, and their median income is below the median income of the country at large.
That's what happens when you refuse to move from the city.
But again, I'm talking about financial realities, right?
Right.
So the combination of a news channel targeting a very small minority of the population, 13%, then throw in that 13% of the country is earning on average below the national average when it comes to a household income. Throw in that only 23% of that audience is college educated. Not that that's the end all, but I'm saying. So when you throw all that stuff in there, your odds of success are already pretty low because your target, look, ad agencies in the early 2000s and even to this day, what's their number one desired demographic?
Oh, it's 18 to 35.
No, but ethnically.
I'd say white because that's the
highest. No, Hispanics.
Hispanics are the number one targeted
group right now. Why? They tend to move concurrently. They tend to have the same cultural threads, even among the disparate Latino cultures.
Right, right. And we're also the fastest to use technology at a
right. So all these factors, do you think it's because white owned businesses necessarily say, hey, let's be friends with them? No, it's because the Latinos represent the highest earning opportunity, the highest growth opportunity for income earning in the United States right now. So they're the number one group.
I see that, but at the end of the day, it's also about your market.
So you're a black label
of whatever, makeup, clothes, hair, beer,
whatever.
That's your demographics right there.
But that's different because that's a service, right? So you're saying for example, BET has a certain amount of success, and I don't know the exact numbers. BET, Black Entertainment Television, right?
But hold on. Who are they owned by?
I don't know.
They're owned by CBS, by Viacom.
Viacom paid the owner
$4
billion. Fair enough.
I'm just referencing how a lot of these, we're doing the research, a lot of black groups were angry and saying it deserved to fail because it was Khan, who was a major stakeholder and not a black man. And I just find it ironic how many still support, on the flip side, those still turn around and support BET, not realizing that its original owner became a billionaire by selling
part of it is also that what does each one provide? Like BET, for the most part, is entertainment, right? It's not news. It's like, hey, we do sitcoms, we do dramas, we do miniseries, right? Whatever. And if they want to make political statements within the context of entertainment, they do so, right?
Right.
But think about it. Like, listen, my mother is over 80. She loves to turn on the radio and listen to the Greek station because it's Greek language. She doesn't have to think too hard. It tells her some news about the old country, and she's happy, right?
Yeah.
In my right mind, I think Greeks make up like 2 to 3% of the population, right?
But they make up most.
Can I say let's start a Greek cable network and expect it to be a monetary success? No,
you could if you only had it for like the urban areas and understood your limitations.
Well, it would have to be exactly.
That's a great segue because that was one of the issues that the critics pointed to. That They put more money into the staff once they brought in, because Roland Martin was offered $85,000. He said, get the hell out of here. But I'm sure Lamont Hill, Blow, right after they realized we got to bring in some big names, it was said that they put a lot of money into the staff, not enough money into the marketing and advertising, and that was one reason why it failed. What are your thoughts on that? You think that was a possible reason? Well, let's start out here. First of all, did it fail because it was linear, meaning only cable? They eventually moved on to streaming and doing apps and things like that. But they were a linear, they were a cable network. Do you think that was one big reason for the failure?
I think it was probably a decent sized contribution to failure. Is like, because in today's market, you have to be what they call omni-channel. It means everywhere the people are, that's where you got to be. So if that's the web, social media, TV, look, cable right now is a legacy dying platform. More and more people are getting disconnected from cable.
You know, John, I wouldn't say it's dying because there's still hundreds of millions, tens of millions of viewers. The problem is you got over, you got just fat TV shows with the salaries, the payments, the unions, and what they charge. I mean, these are, just to do a startup, it's almost impossible, as Black News Channel showed us. It's because they're bloated. They're over bloated with salaries.
A lot of channels are actually now doing the reverse. First, they become a hit on the web. They become a hit on the social media. They become a hit like something like that, some sort of package network. Then they back their way into, like, Newsmax is a good example, right? Newsmax didn't start out being, hey, we're going to be like a cable channel. They started out being a website. They started out like TMZ type of thing. And I'm not even going to discuss the quality of their news, but I'm saying, like, just as a business.
Well, I don't watch them.
They backed into the channel thing, right? Because they brought their audience with them.
Well, actually, what helped them was people were looking for an alternative to Fox. That was your big spike.
No, I get it. They went more Rube than Fox, but that's okay. But the point is, as a business strategy, they backed it. They didn't start at cable and then went outward. They started outward and went backed into cable, which probably seems like the more prudent way to do things right now. So if I was like the Black News Channel, I would have probably said, make it a YouTube channel, make it a Rumble channel, say whatever you want there, build
your
audience.
But that was a complaint, though, John. That was a complaint by a lot of Black leaders, whether women and men. Actually, I'm lying. A lot of layman Blacks, meaning some of the shows and research, they were getting opinions from everyday Black Americans. And they were kind of saying that Black News Channel was no better than a YouTube show. And then they were really ragging on them because despite the big names, they had less than 10,000 viewers daily. Now, less than 10,000 viewers daily combined with putting money into the staff and personalities while ignoring marketing and brand awareness. You've never heard of it. I've forgotten about it. Do you think those two things really kind of exponentially created their end?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a recipe for disaster. Because, look, you've said it before with KFFL. Listen, getting 10,000 people to listen to you every month, that's something like you aspire to when you're a startup on the web. Like when we started on the web, it would be great if we had 10,000 people watching us or visiting our site or reading our article.
But John, let's not fool ourselves. Pat McAfee's extremely successful, and one of his bigger shows, he'll have 30,000, still in the low numbers. Right. I think we have conflated in 80 million homes or 2 million followers. But when you look at how many people actually listen to the live streams, somebody have a million followers, they'll have 300 people, 500 people listening to
you. Understood. But I'm saying if you're on cable, right now, if you gave me and you a cable channel and said, here's a free access to this second tier, all you get is advertising revenue, what would be the first thing you and I would do, just as entrepreneurs? We would promote the hell out of it. We would have sponsors lined up. And the last thing we'd up production values, right? The last thing we would spend on is getting big names, because the assumption is if you've heard of us already, the big names will follow, right?
Yes.
Right? We'll build our own.
You know what? That's a great point. I remember we were nobody when we started out. And I remember I was fielding calls from Pat Summerall's agent down the road, you know, NFL team GM, things like that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because, William, you're a damn good looking guy. I want to talk to you, you know? It was more like the traffic, And it was the news every four. We were so fast with public news. You know, we were Twitter on steroids when it came to Adam Schefter.
Before there was Twitter, there was Hot Off the Wire. Anybody out there, like Hot Off the Wire now sounds like, well, what's the big deal? But back when William and his KFFL cohort started it, it was an innovation. The fact that they were so good at it, and they had like tens of or hundreds of people working on it at various stages, William, like providing news, entering it, publishing, editing.
Oh, no. We were only a handful. That's what made it so tough.
Okay.
Yeah. And not until we started generating an actual profit. See, we put every dime back in. So we started to hire analysts because, dude, I am not exaggerating. Thank God for the military because it kind of trained me. But I was working 18 to 22 hour days at certain times of the season. And I'm not exaggerating, people. 18 to 22 hour days. Not for one or two days, but for weeks on end.
Oh, same here.
Yeah. So, okay. So, things did not go well for the Black News Channel from the get-go. You know? They ended up having lawsuits for gender inequality with pay, sexual harassment, you know. Before I forget, though, going back to the numbers, BNC was tied with Comedy.TV for second to last place in ratings amongst all cable networks tracked by Nielsen in 2021, averaging just 4,000 viewers.
That's amazing.
BET averaged 364,000 viewers last year, which is 92 times BNC's viewership. But even that, BET, that's not a great number. But yet, they're backed by a multi-billion, trillion-dollar company in Viacom, so they can afford it. But there were lawsuits, sexual harassment, former women employees suing the network, alleging gender discrimination and pay inequity. So you had, it's like from the get-go, this never was able to get off the ground. I'm assuming you'll agree, but those issues also took a big financial blow out of the company and helped its doom come quicker than maybe it could have.
Yeah, and honestly, I love when these types of things start eating their own. You know what I mean? Like, you want to be a woke company that talks about, like, you know, everything is sexual harassment, everything is rape, there should be there's pay inequality, which there isn't, but let them think there is. Great, fair enough. Like, you want to run a company like that? That's why I always laugh at socialists and communists who think they could tell Starbucks or Amazon or Apple how to run their company.
One thing I learned, John, in the military I was a grunt, even though I became a supervisor in a sense. You know, you're still a grunt when you're wearing the enlisted uniform. But when I owned KFFL, and after as it grew, we had employees, and I realized the difference between management and the responsibilities. Because you're a bad manager, your company's gone tomorrow.
Right.
You're a bad employee, you're just fired. And the truth of the matter is, the grunt in the trenches, and I used to think like this, but I was wrong. And this is something you learn in age, is that there's greater responsibility with management and the decisions they make than the people in the trenches. And I think doing this research, I saw a lot of people in the trenches say they should do this, should do that. And I'm just shaking my head and like, dude, don't ever start a channel. It won't ever get off the ground.
Right.
But that said, John, the final question, and this is a Don Lemon statement, but I've heard it from many other Blacks, including friends. Well, William, you're not Black, so you just really don't understand. You need to understand what Black America is first. My take is a Latino. Hey, brother, you're not Latino. You're not white. You're not Asian. So shut the fuck up then. And I say it like that because anybody can have an opinion. You know, anybody can talk. That's how we solve problems. That's how we solve issues. I think it's the race hustlers of the world who make those comments to shut down conversation. So with that, and my take is if you're Black, you want to talk about Latinos, knock yourself out. And football players are bad. Athletes are also bad for this. Well, you weren't a bad player, so you shouldn't be commenting. No, but I know how business is run. I did play sports. I know what it takes to win.
Right.
You know, you're just at a different level.
Right.
You know? So with all that said, should we be talking about the Black News Channel being Greek and Latino?
Yeah. I've never bought that nonsense. I don't buy it. Of course, I know you are. But I've never bought this nonsense that men should never have an opinion on abortion. White people should never be able to talk about black problems. Latinos shouldn't be able to talk about Asians. Asians shouldn't be able, but apparently everybody can talk about white guys. That seems to be okay. So to me, that's nonsense. Someone once said to me, goes, who are you to talk about? I go, who do I have to be? Give me some sort of test to take. Like, I love it when, especially on my other shows where I'd get people who would threaten me, literally. And they would say, you don't know what it means to grow up black. I go, really? Did you grow up in the South Bronx like I did?
Exactly. And that's my whole point. It's what he's saying is he's actually crapping on your culture, your belief, who you are, and saying you're a nobody. You're a POS. Yeah. You have no right to comment. And that's what I find offensive. And what makes it worse is they tend to be too ignorant. Because Latinos have made this comment too, I've heard. But it's ignorance. It's because you don't have an answer for the debate or the discussion, so you want to shut it down.
I'm willing to accept that I can't experience certain things. Like, I'll never, despite what woke people tell you, I'll never be able to experience having an abortion, right? Because as a man, don't get pregnant. So when a woman says to me, you don't know the pain of an abortion, you don't know the pain of giving birth, or whatever the case may be that's very strictly related to gender, I don't question them on that. I'll be like, okay, tell me what it was like. It doesn't mean I can't understand. It means I don't have a real opinion on it, right?
You know what I'd say to you, the other line? I haven't used it in a while, and I just remember because off camera we were talking about SCOTUS a little bit. And it reminded me because I heard this the other day. Because, you know, the abortion, we're going to talk about that down the road, but the abortion and Roe versus Wade being rightfully sent back down to the state jurisdiction. But when somebody makes the comments, well, you're a man, you know this, really? Well, if I'm correct, it was what? Was it 7 or 9? It's 9 on the Supreme Court. No. It was 9 men who gave you the right to have an abortion.
Right.
So shut the bleep up. And I'm like you.
According to their opinion, they didn't know anything about it. So maybe that's
exactly. So that's the wrong opinion. Let's go with that. Well, what was that decision that legalized slavery that said blacks were property? You know, it's like people are hypocrites. They want to look at it from this perspective, but they refuse. That's where I pride myself. I'm like, no, the Supreme President is not forever. If that was the case, then blacks would be slaves still. But the Supreme Court actually helped. What's the word? They were part of the reason we had a civil war was because of that decision.
Right.
The Dred Scott decision, if I'm correct, right?
Well, it was just the concept that up until the Civil War, it became a state's issue where whether you allowed slavery or not.
Right. And it had to do with going into the slavery, freemen, and the
slave is
it dealt with the new territories.
Right. He's still the property of his owner was the original ruling. Yeah.
So people who say that to me are the worst of the lot because they don't have anything in their quiver to debate. But we're repeating ourselves, Big John. It's a long show to America. John and I keep working on our timing, our chemistry. We're still new at this. We're still excited. We've taken a step back, Big John, an hour and a half, but it's a great show.
Yes.
A lot of good stuff to talk about.
It was an enjoyable show. Yeah.
You know, everyone, you've been listening to Points on the Board. You know, we had a great discussion with Gersey John on the Black News Channel. Ryan Tannehill and mentorship. My lost love for TB, who can't spell cat if you spot him the C of the T. And obviously, Dave Chappelle is the greatest comedian of our generation because he speaks truths where others hide. You know, that's my statement, not Big John.
But
that said, don't forget to visit sportsgrumblings.com. We are going to be uploading some articles this coming week. I've been working feverishly on that.
Right.
And check out our page on our podcast. Feel free to share it. You know, that's how we're going to grow. We're going to grow with your help. Big John, tell the world good night.
Good night, world.
Until next time.